Today's program was brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hi there, you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, and this is Eat Your Words. My name is Kathy Irway, I'm your host, and my guest today, a wonderful, legendary, pioneering restaurateur. She may not have just the same name recognition as Alice Waters, but she has actually been pioneering concepts around sourcing from local, sustainable farms in her region, and just advocating for greater food awareness and for greater food policies throughout the U.S. during her career. She has also just written a beautiful memoir called My Organic Life, and I'm speaking with Nora Pulyan. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. I'm so glad that you could make it here to Brooklyn as part of this wonderful book's promotion, My Organic Life, How a Pioneering Chef Helped Shape the Way We Eat Today. It is really a wonderful story.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'm glad you had a chance to read it.
Yeah, I'm going to read much more, and I'm looking forward to also checking out more of your recipes because I know you've had some award-winning cookbooks. So I'm all Nora fan right now, thanks to
this. That's
great. And with such an evocative and lovely book, I would love to start off with just by reading a little excerpt, if you don't mind.
Okay.
So this is early on. You're talking about growing up in Vienna. The farm worked according to the rhythms of the day and the seasons. Every morning and evening, Nani would milk two cows. She poured the milk she collected into a separator and turned the handle. And out from one tube came milk and out the other, cream. Cream was like gold to them. After the war in Vienna, we got used to eating dollops of whipped cream on our desserts. But here, that was an unheard of extravagance. Nani would collect the cream until she had enough to make butter, a task she performed every 2 weeks. I would watch as she poured the cream into the big wooden barrel with a handle and began to churn it. When the cream became clumpy, she would add ice, cold water from the spring to rinse off the butter fat. She shaped the butter into loaves with her hands, then rolled them with a wooden tool that imprinted a design on top. Every farm had its own design, so you could always know where that butter came from. I love that detail, that added touch that showed a pride of their work, a way of caring for the food in its provenance and for the simple beauty of what you ate.
Oh, I think it's wonderful the way you read it. That makes me cry.
it's just a beautiful and really telling glimpse into how you were raised and around food. And I know you grew up right around the war when food was scarce, and it was something to respect and treat with a reverence.
I think it was really this first experience that like so much in your life, when it happens, you don't realize what an impact it had on you.
Right.
But this had an enormous impact on you to live on this farm, this self-sufficient farm in the Alps, in the mountains of Tirol, where these farmers had actually to grow and raise the food to sustain themselves for the whole year for four people and us too. And I just remember they didn't waste one thing. They worked from morning to evening, and I just remember that I had so much admiration from that. And I think from there I have the feeling that you should not waste food. You should use everything, and you should definitely be full of admiration for the farmers, the people that grow your food, because they have to work so hard. You know, they have to work so hard, and they're at the mercy of the weather.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have seen them lose all their wheat, which meant their bread for the next year because of a terrible hailstorm. And
right.
it really gives you a big respect for food.
Whether war or weather or something. And I think it's wonderful that even though they work so hard, they put that wonderful, beautiful little mark on the butter, you know, as a decoration.
Yeah.
Taking such pride in it still.
Yeah, and even their uniform or their special clothes they wear to go to church, it's just gorgeous. It's just was beautiful. These dirndls with velvet, and they had on these special hats made out of felt, and they had, even in this very difficult rustic difficult time and rustic place, they had still a sense of pride and of tradition, I guess, to continue.
They had character.
They had
much character. And the food did, too, it sounds like. Very much so.
It was what they grew. Mm-hmm. And so they utilized the things they raised and what they grew. And so it was very simple food, but it was original food. You know, it was really true food.
Local food, you could say. I love that the title is sort of a play on words with My Organic Life. And, of course, you are renowned for opening the first certified organic restaurant in the United States. But on the other hand, this book reads like a wonderful poem in how you came into becoming a restaurateur, even how you came to the United States in the first place was for love. And then you started cooking dinner parties and then teaching cooking classes, not thinking, you know, not planning this out. It just sort of organically happened that you became a restaurateur.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely right. It sort of followed, you know, a sort of line, a sort of stream, a ribbon. I mean, it was, being exposed to this farm, going to the French school where I was served a three-course lunch every day, and having parents that were very health conscientious, and my mother was a good cook, and coming to this country with a Frenchman, having to learn how to cook, you know, food that my French husband liked.
Wanted to eat, yeah.
And being in this country where it was very difficult to find the kind of ingredients that I was used to in Europe, you know, everything was here so packaged and prepackaged and sterile, and you couldn't touch it and you couldn't communicate. There was no butcher and no baker and just this sort of very anonymous big grocery stores. And then, you know, how I really got into food and entertaining, and then my friends asked me to help them entertain dinner parties, and then asked me to teach them how to cook, and then the cooking school went into catering business, and then went into my first restaurant at a small bed and breakfast in Washington, and there I met my partners, and then I turned into Norris, and Norris is now 36 years old.
Wow, in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
That's wonderful. I love that you don't shy from kind of describing all the hardships and the, you know, the organic, let's say, slip-ups along the way. And not every dinner party was a total success. I'm sure you guys are imagining Nora's dinner parties right now as being these pristine, wonderful, smooth-sailing things. But you talk about an instance where everyone's drunk before you could get the chicken cooked properly, and it was raw. And, you know, these things are actually what happened.
Yeah. That they were learning experiences. And, I mean, I think experiences like this really propel you forward, because I learned that the oven Fahrenheit is not the same as centigrade, and that if I cook a whole chicken, it takes much longer than if I do half a chicken. And I remember once inviting friends over. That was much later. I had my own kitchen, and I was not that used to a broiler, and it was gas, my broiler. The broiler normally I used were electric, and so I remember making some papillotes for dinner, and we were sitting in the living room drinking some wine, and suddenly the daughter said, "Look, there's smoke here. My eyes are watering."
Oh, no.
And I went into the kitchen, and I had turned on the broiler, and so the papillotes had gotten on fire. And my friends still say today that from that moment on, they didn't feel uncomfortable inviting me for dinner. because if I can burn it, you know, bring on flame, they can do that too.
That's so true. That's very empowering, I think. Anyone who's afraid of hosting. Don't be afraid to slip up. But I find it really interesting, you know, you're talking about how the food was so different when you came to the U.S. There's so much to say about that compared to, you know, what you grew up with. But one of the first things that you sort of latched onto, it sounds like, were the ethnic groceries mm-hmm. around D.C., where you could explore, you know, everything from African and produce to who knows what. I'm not sure.
Well, it was, there were a French and Italian and Middle Eastern grocery store and, of course, an African American. I mean, it was... They were the only places, really, where I recognized the food that I am used to. And you know, the Italian had olive oil and had great Italian bread, and not Wonder bread, you know. Yeah, mm-hmm. Many people forget that, but in the 60s and in the 70s, I think it was really a culinary wasteland here. Mm. I mean, it was very sad. Nothing was seasonal. You could never find any. The produce department in the grocery store were the smallest department. They looked the same all year different. It was
that must have been shocking.
It was.
That was. So,
but you know, on the other hand, I think because of that, I started to research food, and because of that, I came to learn about the agricultural practices in this country, and because of that, I learned about all the pesticides and all the hormones and antibiotics that are put in our food. And I think that really, guided me to say, no, I don't want to be part of that. And that's how I became mm-hmm. so passionate about organic mm-hmm. food.
And you went around teaching that and advocating for that. And because a lot of people didn't really know what the story was behind the food system.
Well, they still don't know today, unfortunately. Yeah. Many people still don't know. I think I'm always amazed when I talk to people and I do some of my presentation, the questions I get asked, how people really are not aware. For instance, with farmers market, local food or farm-to-table food, what it's called now, which I think is really a very weird name. Because
farm-to-table is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, even McDonald's is farm to table.
Yeah.
So what is so great? But anyway, the local food and people automatically, and farmers market, so people automatically assume that everything is organic.
Right.
But it's not true. It's unfortunately not true. And for instance, the farmers market in Dupont Circle in Washington, D.C., that I sort of inspired to start, you know, started it. I gave it a jump start by advocating that we needed a consumer-only, a producer-only farmers market. And there must be like 35 different farmers, and only 4 of them are organic.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Well, I think that you have a lot of good ideas, for ways that we can kind of spread greater awareness. And I loved how lovingly you described some of the farms that you were working with, the farms that you met and sought out to supply your restaurant, mm-hmm. like the meat suppliers and so forth, which I guess many chefs are following your footsteps doing.
But I think they have it much lighter now, because when mm-hmm. I started, I had to buy the whole animal. And so I had to buy a 1,000-pound hanging weight beef that had, 700 pounds of ground meat. And so I had to think about, what do I do with all this ground meat? And that's how it was.
That's a challenge.
Yeah.
Wow. So what would you say are, I guess, the next biggest challenges? In restaurants, since that's one of your specialties. What should we do more of? More composting? I know you're a big fan of that. More, what do we need to accomplish?
I really think that we need to be more informative and more educated. I think that in schools and culinary schools, I think there should be mandatory that you work on a farm for 3 months or even longer. I mean, every painter learns about...
I will sign up for that.
And I think they should have also nutrition classes, because I think when we see our health problems in this country, it's not only that our food is not wholesome and is full of these chemical additives, but it's also the preparation we do. I think so much in chefs and restaurants, they are very creative, but they don't think about the nutritional value and that they really put so much fat and sugar and salt in their food.
Right.
And
it's like flavor over nutrition.
Yeah, and I think you can have it both. I think in the Mediterranean cuisine, you see how they flavor with, you know, herbs and spices and, you know, garlic and olive oil.
Which are
and
good for you.
Yeah, and lemon. I think there are other ways than fat, sugar, and salt. And I think when we look at the health problems in this country, we have to change. And I think, unfortunately, human beings have to be, like, nearly destroyed before they change. But I think we are close to that. I mean, if you look at the cost of our health and in this country, and if you look, you know, environmental cost, you know, the climate change and the loss of our topsoil, and you know, it's just,
where is this breaking point? Are we, you know?
Yeah, I think we are close.
Yeah.
I think we are probably 70% there. I think we should really change, and I think we do.
The time is now.
I think we have, I mean, considering that I have this restaurant for 36 years, I mean, I could never have done a certified organic restaurant 36 years ago, but I could do it 16 years ago. And now when you go to any kind of grocery store, you find a little organic section. I mean, that's wonderful.
Yeah, that is a good development.
I mean, to find organic food in the 70s and even in the 80s was a big challenge.
Yes, now I can find it in my bodega, so... Nora, let's cut to a quick little musical interlude, and we'll be right back to chat more.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years, so it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Your brother, you've been spreading honey. Won't you tell your sister you've been spreading honey? Won't they come along and spread some honey too? Oh, won't they come along and spread some honey too?
Hey, hey. We're back chatting more with Nora Pouillon, the author of My Organic Life, and she is also the legendary restaurateur of Restaurant Nora.
Mm-hmm.
So,
thank you.
And she's just visiting us from her busy schedule running that restaurant in D.C., and I feel like we didn't really get into enough of your life just yet, but just to kind of focus on organic and what that means and how that's changed, because I'm really curious how it was that you received the certification for organic restaurant, and that was a big milestone.
Mm-hmm.
And how was it regarded?
Well, regarded, actually, it was not that much acknowledged in the press. I was sort of disappointed that I had...
That's not a big achievement, though. I mean, that sugar, you had to find all that. Who knows? I mean... Every single thing, every
well,
lemon.
Well, you have to prove that at least 95% of whatever comes into a restaurant comes from certified organic sources, and you're inspected once a year. And so I had a lot of local farmers that, not a lot, but I had some that refused to become certified, so I couldn't use them anymore. And I had to find, you know, organic sugar, organic coffee, organic salt, organic, you know, flour,
cloves of garlic,
everything, and And actually the animals was the most difficult one to find people to raise for me, or chicken and ducks and beef and veal and pork. I mean, that was the most difficult to find farmers who wanted to do it in a certified.
Yeah, rabbit or something like that.
The whole process took 2 years.
Yeah.
It took 2 years first of all, I had to find a certification agency that I found, and the Oregon Tills, and they said they would certify me, but they said we have to create the standards first. So together we worked for 2 years, and in 1999...
Oh, wow, so you really made that happen.
We had to, because it had never been done before for a restaurant. I mean, there was certification for a store and for a manufacturing plant and for a farm, but there was not for a restaurant, and so we had to create that. But, you know, it happened, and the funny thing was the woman who took it on, Yvonne Frost, was the president of Oregon Tills, and she was afraid of airplanes, and so she took the train across from Oregon to Washington to certify me. So, but that was a wonderful day, and I was so surprised, because when I informed the press about it, they really didn't understand the accomplishment of it. And it was only in the New York Times, my friend Elizabeth Becker, who did a big story about it.
Okay. So do you think it's worth, because I meet a lot of smaller, you know, independent businesses and farms that don't feel that it's worth it right now for them to get that organic certifications, and that you know, that's more of like a big business type of thing, because they can afford that marketing budget. But do you think it was worth it for you in the end?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think if you are an individual and you go to a farmer's market and you have the opportunity to talk with the farmer and find out about when he sprays and what he sprays and if he sprays, that's one thing. But if you sell in a restaurant, you know, to people you actually don't know, and you get things like oranges, bananas from California, and so you have no control and no communication with the farmer, I think it's very important to be certified organic. And I think in a farmer's market environment, you can ask the farmer about their practices, and they can tell you, well, I spray only then, and I only spray once. But I think if you have a restaurant, and to give the confidence to your customers that what they eat and what is on their plate is all pure and wholesome and high nutritional value and without any of the chemical additives, I mean, I feel I had to get certified.
And you have that now, you have that badge to hold up and stand behind. And I think it was a very bold undertaking, but it means a lot, because I think that there's a lot of restaurants that say they're sort of farm to table, like you said, which I don't know. Now I'm like, what does that mean? So it's really proof.
I was hoping it would inspire more people, but unfortunately there are only like a handful of certified organic restaurants in the country. It's a big job, and as people say, you have to be nuts to do it. But I mean, I think you have to be really passionate and dedicated to do it, and that's how I felt. I felt that I wanted to. I mean, that's how I live myself. I feel that. You know, I feel the most important thing in your life is to stay healthy. My father always said, no money in the world can buy your health. You better take care of it.
That's true.
And I feel that health is not only health not being sick. Mm-hmm. Health means also feeling good, and, you know, feeling good in your mind and spirit too, and in your body. And I feel it. The only way to achieve that is to nourish your body with the best possible, most wholesome ingredients you can find. And that includes, of course, food and water, very important. And we really don't have that much control over our air, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, I think that it's just wonderful how you shared these, shared the wisdom that you've gained too through your upbringing. I remember reading that your mother would give or make garlic toast for something like worms. And then there's a oatmeal with grated apples for an upset stomach. Nettles for thicker hair.
Nettle tea. Yeah.
Nettle tea. And tomato and cucumbers on the skin for sunburn.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot more of those. But just that knowledge that you have with ingredients and just like nature, I can imagine all these sort of pieces of wisdom being translated into a product with maybe like a cucumber on the bottle. But I think that it's wonderful if you just kind of step back and take in these lessons.
Oh, thank you. But I think all answers to our ills are in nature.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just that we have forgotten about it because science became so popular and so much appreciated and taken for only the true word. But I think nature has a lot of very good recipes. I mean, I think if you're run over by a car, I think it's very good to go to the emergency room and to have a surgeon and a doctor look at it. But, you know, if you all have headaches or if you have a cold or if you have, ailment in your hip or whatever, mm-hmm. I think there are lots of, or a sunburn or a bee sting, there are lots of remedies that you can do yourself, just with nature.
That's a really lovely takeaway for me. It's something so practical that anyone can just start doing
mm-hmm.
right now. Another thing that, something that hasn't been forgotten so much from your particular brand of cooking or food philosophy is the sort of Mediterranean and Provençal style that you were making back in the 70s in D.C., and this was so different from what you describe as a sort of stuffy French food that was mostly it in restaurants.
And this is also, I think, when Alice started, because at that time, a French restaurant imported all their food from France, an Italian mm-hmm. restaurant imported all their food from Italy. And I think that's when I decided I don't want to have anything to do with French food, because on top the French food that was popular was the cream sauces
okay.
and the butter sauces and the whole very stiff, kind of service, and you had to dress up and be proper and know how to use a knife and a fork to peel an orange, basically, nearly. And so I wanted to be the opposite. I wanted to give people really good food, just food from the earth, just really good food, but that tastes delicious and still in an elegant setting.
Mm-hmm.
But you could come as you liked it, like your home.
Your everyday food.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also the atmosphere in the restaurant is more home, like it's not pretentious.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, unpretentious food. Yeah. And
there, I have people sometimes coming in their jogging shorts and some people coming in their cocktail dresses. And they sit next to each other and they're all treated the same way. And
I think
that was really important to me.
So having a restaurant in D.C., you mentioned one of your earliest customers was Ralph Nader or regulars. Yeah. Who's some of your regulars now that you want to...
Well, I have a lot of people from the Hill that come... I had Larry David come last week, from Curb Your Enthusiasm. But I have also, of course, all the presidents came to the restaurant, even the Republicans, but they didn't come. They sent their wives. And Obamas came twice already, and people from his administration come a lot. And I have also, rock groups and, musicians and... writers and filmmakers. I mean, it has become so. The word got around. So if people are really a little bit into more sustainable living or mm-hmm. more into food that is more original and good for them, they come to my restaurant. So it's. People are excited when sometimes people, I was at your restaurant and I sat next to Caroline Kennedy or something. Mm-hmm. So they like to say that.
That's a great reflection, though, of your restaurant. And that's really fun. Can I come?
Yeah.
You could be like, Kathy Urey was here. No, So I guess that's about all the time we have for today.
Okay.
Thank you so much for joining us, Nora.
Thank you so much for having me. I think it's always nice to talk about the food and about my passion, because I hope with everything I say, I inspire other people to do the same.
Your message.
Because I'm just a regular person. I'm not a scientist. I'm even not a learned cook, but... the idea is that to tell to people, and with the book too, is if I can do it, so can you.
Yes, absolutely. Well, your words will not be forgotten.
We really
appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks, everyone at Heritage. And thanks so much, Nora. Please check out My Organic Life. It's now on bookshelves from Knopf. We'll see you next week on Eat Your Words.
Ooh, I like the way you do.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
So good inside. And oh, babe, you really ought to know that I ain't never had no loving like this before.